It's nice to see young ones going to children's church. Genesis chapter 30, verse 25 through Genesis 31, 55 is where we are in this fascinating story of Jacob. We're starting the second half of the series. And like Jacob, I have personally met and dealt with a lot of difficult people. People who've been deceptive. Some even costing me more than $100,000. And some teaching me a valuable lesson in forgiveness. But let's talk about the Labans in your life. I know you'd rather not. You'd rather talk about something or someone a bit more pleasant. But your Laban is anything but pleasant. Your Laban is demanding. He has the sensitivity of a pit bull. Your Laban is conniving. She seeks and breaks promises like a short order cook breaks eggs. Your Laban is deceptive. There's always a card up her sleeve or fingers behind his back. Your Laban is manipulative. He'll flatter you until he gets what he wants and then move on to someone else. Your Laban loves to be adored. Enough of me talking about me. What about you? You talk about me. Max Lucado comments, your Laban is streptococcus on the tonsils of your life. You'd like a day without him, but you're stuck. Your Laban is your in-law. Your Laban is your boss. Your Laban sits in the next cubicle or plays on the same team. A future with no Laban for the time is not possible, not an option. Maybe you even wonder why in the world God has a Laban in your life. Jacob must have asked himself that same question 5,110 times each day of the 14 years he worked for the man. 14 years. He couldn't escape him. He'd married Laban's daughters, for goodness sake. And the original agreement was for 7 years. And as you know, Laban pulled a wedding night shell trick, swapping Laban with her older sister Leah, and leaving Jacob with no option but to work 7 more years. In the Bible, the number 7 often signifies complete, appropriate symbolism for Jacob, because he must have considered himself a complete fool for working for less than minimum wage, for a man who traded his daughters like a cattleman trades cattle at a stock show. During the second set of 7 years, Jacob saw his family and his troubles multiply. He gained 11 sons and 1 daughter, 7 children by Leah, 1 by Rachel, 2 by Rachel's maid Bilhah, and 2 by Leah's maid Zilpah. Jacob had arrived at Laban's camp with nothing. And after 14 filled years, his headaches had increased, but his bank account hadn't. 10 times in 6 years, Laban altered the method of computing Jacob's wages, leaving Jacob empty-handed. Is this how God rewards his children? Is this how God keeps his promises? What happened to that ladder that led into heaven? Where are the ascending and descending angels? Why can't one come and pluck Laban out of Jacob's life and plop him someplace else? Where is God in the midst of this chaos? The answer came in the form of a dream, an odd one, but dreams often are. Jacob told Leah and Rachel about it. Genesis 31, verses 10 through 13. In breeding season, I once had a dream in which I looked up and saw that the male goats mating over with the flock were streaked, speckled, or spotted. The angel of God said to me in the dream, "Jacob?" I answered, "Here I am." And he said, "Look up and see that all the male goats mating with the flock are streaked, speckled, or spotted. For I have seen all that Laban has been doing to you. I am the God of Bethel, where you anointed a pillar, where you made a vow with me. Now leave this land at once and go back to your native land." Well, we'll set aside the curious comment about all the speckled and spotted and streaked goats. They matter, and we'll return to them shortly. But they matter less than the big news that God is giving to Jacob. "I have seen all that Laban has been doing to you. I haven't turned away. I haven't forgotten your plight. I haven't dismissed your need. I have seen." Jacob was left with two options. One was to trust God or grow anxious. He could either believe in the presence of heaven or heed the presence of the problems. And if you assumed that he focused on his problems, no one would fault you. Jacob has done very little so far to show his faith. You were about to see a change in this man, a change for the better, albeit momentary. We've waited a decade and a half to say these words. We've seen the swindler swindle his brother and cheat his father, and we've seen the fugitive stumble into Laban's camp. We've seen the lover so drunk on love and liquor that he wakes up with the wrong bride, like a story scrambled as a spilled Scrabble box. We've seen the passive husband sit in silence as his wives squabble, their hearts break. We've seen him reap what he sowed. But finally, something within Jacob begins to stir. He turns in his resignation to his father-in-law. I'm reading from Genesis 30, 25 to 28, and I'm reading out of the Message because it's a little clearer in the narrative. After Rachel had had Joseph, Jacob spoke to Laban. "Let me go back home. Give me my wives and my children for whom I've served you. You know how hard I've worked for you." Laban said, "If you please, I have learned through divine inquiry that God has blessed me because of you." He went on, "So name your wages and I'll pay you." Laban was not a man of faith. He was not a seeker of God. Yet Laban was getting richer every year, and he couldn't figure out why he was so wealthy, and he sought an explanation through, he calls it, divine inquiry. Perhaps he checked some tarot cards or consulted palm readers or rolled some dice or read some tea leaves. Finally, he realized that the house of Laban had prospered because of the presence of Jacob. "God has blessed me because of you," verse 27. Max continues, "Life with a Laban can have us wondering if we are making a difference. The truth is, we aren't, but God is. Wherever we go, we carry God's blessings with us. Blessings that sometimes overflow into the lives of others. How good is God? He wants to bless even the Labans of this world. He uses us Jacobs to do so." And Jacob told his father-in-law, verse 29 and 30, "You know well what my work has meant to you and how your livestock has flourished under my care. The little you had when I arrived has increased greatly. Everything I did resulted in blessings for you. Isn't it about time that I did something for my own family?" In other words, Laban, I took your corner store and turned it into a multi-million dollar operation. Whatever I touched, the Lord blessed. Under my direction, your income is multiplied. But now is the time for me to take care of my own family. Laban, who was tight as the strings on a tennis racket, asked, "So what should I pay you?" Genesis 30, 31 to 33. Jacob said, "You don't have to pay me a thing. But how about this? I'll go back to pasture and care for your flocks. Go through your entire flock today and take out every speckled or spotted sheep, even dark-colored lambs. Every spotted or speckled goat, they will be my wages. That way you can check them on my honesty when you assess my wages. If you find any goat that's not speckled or spotted or a sheep that's not black, you will know that I stole it." Remember that dream? If God, in it, God told Jacob to build a flock with streaked, speckled, or spotted animals. So Jacob obeyed. He offered to take as his wages a handful of dotted sheep and goats. Laban couldn't believe his ears. No wonder Jacob was broke. A shepherd couldn't get rich by taking a few marked sheep and goats. Laban thought Jacob was a fool, but Jacob was acting on faith. Verses 34 to 36. "Fair enough," says Laban. "It's a deal." But that very day, Laban removed all of the mottled and spotted billy goats, all of the speckled and spotted nanny goats, every animal that had even a touch of white on it, plus all the black sheep, and placed them under the care of his sons. Then he put a 3-day journey between himself and Jacob. And meanwhile, Jacob went on tending what was left of Laban's flock. Before Jacob had a chance to cull the flocks, Laban purged them of all the speckled and spotted sheep. And together with his sons and his workers, they scampered up and down the hills collecting all that of the dark and spotted ones. Laban then sent the sheep off on a 3-day journey to a distant pasture, and Jacob was left with a fraction of his promised wages. Ever the shark, Laban had cheated Jacob again. Can't we envision Laban? He just sort of smug and pigeon-chested with pride, talking to himself as he rides and sways on the camel. "Maybe your God forgot you this time, Jacob." Can we envision Jacob ever coming closer to just lashing out against Laban? It wasn't enough for the man to cheat him at the wedding. It wasn't enough for Laban to force Jacob to work for nothing. It wasn't enough for Laban to take advantage of his own son-in-law. Jacob had to leave with next to nothing. But Jacob did not react in anger. Instead, he set about the task of building his flock. Verses 37 to 39. He took fresh branches from the almond, poplar, and plane trees and peeled the bark, leaving white strips on them. He stuck the peeled branches in front of the watering troughs where the flocks came to drink. And when the flocks were in heat, they came to drink and mated in front of the streaked branches. And then they gave birth to young that were streaked or spotted or speckled. What's going on here? Was this superstition or folklore? Or was Jacob ahead of his time? Some scholars think so. Andrew Steinman, in his Genesis commentary, says, "It has been recently proposed that Jacob's stripping the bark from the branches may have exposed some nutrient that was then in the drinking water, and thereby changing the color of the coats of the young that were born. Warren Wiersbe counters that and says Jacob's peel branches belong in the same category as Rachel's mandrakes. They were just simply superstitious practices that had nothing to do with what actually happened. It was God who controlled the genetic structure of the animals, multiplied the spotted and striped sheep and goats, thus increasing Jacob's wealth very quickly. At Bethel, God had promised to bless Jacob, and he kept his promises. Since Laban had agreed to Jacob's terms, he could do nothing about the result. All those animals belonged to Jacob. Well, over the next 6 years, Jacob put his unusual breeding practice and plan to work. Verse 43, Jacob got richer and richer, acquiring huge flocks, lots and lots of servants, not to mention camels and donkeys. God rewarded Jacob's faith. God used Laban to teach Jacob to trust God. Jacob didn't like Laban. He wanted to leave Laban. Yet he was better off because of Laban. Laban was Jacob's catfish. Research the phrase catfish and codfish, and you'll find an apocryphal yet insightful tale. Fishermen struggled to find a way to deliver codfish to market. They tried freezing them, but the fish lost their flavor. They tried transporting them in a seawater tank, and the codfish would be inactive too long. And when they arrived, they were soft and mushy. And finally, someone came up with a solution. Since catfish and codfish are natural enemies, a catfish was placed in the tank. It chased the codfish during the entire transport, resulting in the delivery of healthy cod. Great story. While there's no proof that fishermen used catfish, there's ample evidence that God does. In Jacob's story, Laban was Jacob's catfish. And you? Might God be saying the same words to you as he said to Jacob? I see what is happening. I know about the manipulation, the unfairness, the disregard for your feelings or future. I see it. I see you. And I am using this experience to train you. God's prone to do this. Scripture explains this trouble you're in isn't punishment, it's training. The normal experience for children of God. God is doing what is best for us, training us to live God's holy best. Hebrews 12, verses 8 and 10. Are you and I being trained? You, like Jacob, are part of God's delivery system to deliver hope. You are a courier of his covenant. Yet you and I, like Jacob, have our own foils and foibles and flaws. So God is at work in you, both to will and to work for his good pleasure. Philippians 2:13. He will, quote, equip you with every good thing that you may do his will, working in you that which is pleasing in his sight. Hebrews 13:21. We are the rough stones. He is the lapidary. We are the bent timber, and he is the carpenter. Rather than grumble about the people who irritate you, see them for what they are, God's training tool. He is teaching you to trust him, and he hasn't promised you to give you striped sheep, But he has promised to anoint you with the oil of gladness, Psalm 45:7. He has promised to supply all your needs to his riches in glory in Christ Jesus, Philippians 4:19. He has promised to bless you with good measure, pressed down, shaken together, running over, Luke 6:38. To grant sufficient grace, 2 Corinthians 12:9. To make all things work together for your good, Romans 8:28. To defeat any weapon that is forged against you, Isaiah 54:17. To provide streams in the desert, Isaiah 43:19. To make a way where there is no way, Isaiah 43:16. He has promised to turn sorrow into joy, Psalm 30, verse 11. To bind up your broken heart, Psalm 147, 3. At some point, someone is going to boil your blood. He or she may not be a true scoundrel like Laban, but even those closest to you will let an insult fly every now and then. The temptation is always to retaliate, to use your head in a less than traditional way, but don't give in. Don't fight Laban on Laban's terms. Respond to Laban with faith in God. Jacob did. And at the end of 6 years, Jacob had enough riches and had had enough of Laban. So he loaded up and left for Canaan. Laban pursued him. He accused Jacob of being a thief. And 2 decades of frustration fired out of Jacob like a howitzer spits bullets. Genesis 31, verses 38 to 42. I have been with you 20 years now. Your sheep and your goats I have not miscarried, nor have I eaten rams from your flocks. I didn't bring you animals torn by wild beasts. I bore the loss myself. And you demanded payment for me for whatever was stolen by day or night. This was my situation. The heat consumed me in the daytime, and the cold at night. Sleep fled from my eyes. It was like this for the 20 years I was in your household. I worked for you 14 years for your 2 daughters, 6 years for your flocks, and you changed my wages 10 times. If the God of my father, the God of Abraham, and the fear of Isaac had not been with me, you would surely have sent me away empty-handed. But God has seen my hardship and the toil of my hands, and last night he rebuked you. Jacob had fulfilled his 14 years. He had absorbed the losses. He had endured the bad weather, weathered the bad times. Laban did not disagree. He couldn't disagree. Jacob not only survived his season with Laban, but he thrived. He had developed a deeper faith. He declared for all to hear, God has seen my hardship. God used Laban to shape Jacob's life. Max asks, is God using your Laban to shape you? You'd prefer a life with no Labans. If this season has one chasing you around the tank, remember that God uses peculiar people to bring out the best in his people. Try this. Try talking to God about your Laban. Ask him, Lord, what lessons are you teaching me through this catfish? And this, thank God for your Laban. Quote, when troubles of any kind come your way, consider it an opportunity for great joy. You know that when your faith is tested, your endurance has a chance to grow. James 1, verses 2 through 3. Life's Labans can make you want to pull your hair out. But they can also make you desperate for God. And that's an invaluable blessing. So the next time life gives you Labans, you know what to do. Your Laban will not be around forever. The day is coming when you, like Jacob, will be released. Till then, trust God's purpose. Trust God's promises. You'll be far better because of it. Selah.